All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk covering every team in the NHL. New episodes every Monday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Does that keep burning the same way now that you've won two?
Yeah, I'm not sure it's the same for everybody again. Yeah. Quite honest. It's like a whole different level to me is what it is. It's like, it's like all that matters to me. And you're trying to translate that to the players that, you know, to get to that level, what it takes and the difference that it makes in their career and their lives.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the In the Dome podcast. These players are uncoachable, aren't they?
Johnny Bowman couldn't coach them.
They're a bunch of bums.
Oh, it's been four coaches. What else? Yeah.
Never let this go.
Couldn't possibly be Jeff Ward. Couldn't possibly.
I totally forgot he was even still in hockey until you see him on the Ducks bench, like with that dumb look on his face.
This stupid face with his nice hair.
Like staring like, what are you doing?
Oh.
I like how everyone was like, oh shit, the Ducks power play looks so good. It must be Jeff Ward.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely Jeff Ward. Remember how great our power play was?
It's like it's like when people talk about how good the Oilers' power play is. And it's like, oh, see, Colton, he's power play. Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, okay. I'm sure it's the brains of Jeff Ward telling I'm sure he instructed Zegras where to go and shit.
Fuck, he looks good, eh?
This Ducks look really good.
Actually, they do. They have that young energy, like when a team is about to be good. Like the Chicago Blackhawks, right before they were good, you could tell they were going to be good. They got that little energy where they're just like, fuck, they're close to being good.
Yeah, they look really good, and they're really fun to watch, and they're fast, and Gibson's really good. Yeah. I thought we were going to get Gibson last night, but.
No! We open up with big old Jolly Rancher talking about the only thing that fucking matters is winning a Stanley Cup. That's all he cares about. And boy, is that translating, eh? Boy, is that translating.
Translating to points. It's translating to wins. It's translating to where currently tied for first place in terms of points in the league.
I think now is a good time to throw in this clip. It's I don't know if you saw this because it's an interview with Brad Richardson before the LA Kings game, but there's some questions about Daryl and his style of coaching that it's actually really good.
Yeah, I think it's a little different, but you know, Daryl's Daryl. I mean, he expects, you know, every night's a must win game, and he gets the best out of his players. So,
how does he maximize his players? Because we hear that all the time.
Yeah, I mean,
is there an example of him doing that for you?
I just think, you know, you have no choice but to be at your best. You know, he's not scared to, you know, move guys around or take you out of the lineup or do whatever if you're not going to play well. So. He's very honest with you, which you respect as a player when a coach gives you the straight up answer, but he just demands you be at your best, and there's no nights off. Every game is a must win.
What makes that, I don't know if this makes sense, but what makes that fun for you guys? Like, I imagine there's a transition where a group has to really sort of buy into wanting to play that way.
Yeah, I mean, for us, it's just everyone plays and everyone has a big role in it. You know, some teams, you know, the third or fourth lines don't play very much, or the fourth line doesn't play at all in some teams. And for us, you know, we use every line, and we need every line to be good. And I think that has a big buy-in on the team, and everyone feels important. And that's just the way Daryl's teams are.
So there's a right from one of the horse's mouths on Daryl and his style of coaching. And I mean, we already knew this coming into it, but utilizing everything out of your players, getting everything out of your players. And that was always our biggest argument with the lack thereof of coaching in the past was it couldn't be the coaching. It has to be the players. Well, I don't know, because we haven't had a player or coach come in that can actually get everything out of the players, maximize Johnny Gaudreau, maximize Matthew Tkachuk, maximize Sean Monahan down the list. We're starting to see that unfold in a way that Brad Richardson states that it uses everybody. I mean, that was a really cool perspective that he shares, because he's right. There are a lot of teams, Edmonton Oilers, that rely heavily on, in this case, is one line. It's two players. Whereas Daryl Sutter, the way he coaches, the way he coaches a team to win long-term sustainably, deep into the playoffs, is utilizing everybody. Everybody has a role, and everybody's role contributes to the whole.
Well, I think it's kind of funny. You hear all these reporters asking, like, they're just so confused by all of this. It's like, he does what now? What does he do? Daryl, he gives you a role and forms a team identity. Explain this. This is blowing my mind. How can this be?
You're starting to see, well, here, but you're starting to hear now in his media pressers, people are actually starting to listen to what he says, eh? It's not just a bunch of reporters just throwing out stupid statements and, think of that. It's like, school's in, hey? That's the vibe I'm getting now is now when he gets up to the podium, they're just fucking, they're starting to turn into sponges because they realize, fuck, this guy knows what he's talking about.
Well, and the other thing too, like, talking about what Richardson's saying, like, I mean, that's how you win in the playoffs. Like, I mean, the only reference point most of us have is 2004, and that's what it was like. It was like everybody knew what they were doing every shift on the ice.
Everybody.
Like, every time you jumped over the boards, you knew what you were doing.
Like, everybody contributed. Oleg Saprykin, he was unbelievable. Forechecking master. Fucking Simon. He chipped in. He scored some big goals while fucking being a brute force.
Oh, man. He was good.
Christoph Oliwa. Remember him?
Chuck Kobasu.
Fucking. I remember Sean Donovan. John Donovan.
Oh, man.
Remember that Donovan, one play? That Chris one Clark. Play with Donovan where he's about to dump the puck in, but he knows he has to get over the red line. He's about 5 feet away, and he sees the guys coming. He knows he's about to get annihilated, but he does it anyways because it's the right play. Makes the play, takes the hit. That's like – and then, he scores some beauty goals too. Right? Yeah. But literally, you go down the list, and like everybody, like Billy Niemann,
Chris like, Clark. Do you remember that defense, Nielsen. What that D was like? Like Regier, Leopold, Montador.
Warner.
Rhett Warner. Like Andrew Ferentz, like it wasn't like this great. It's like kind of like now, right? It's like just kind of like a weird group of guys, and
yeah,
they were so good at defense. And right, like that's an answer to the question. Like, okay, well, why does Eric Gabranson and Zdorov, like, why do they not suck all of a sudden?
And that's the magic of Daryl Sutter.
Why does Rasmus Anderson not look like ass every single night anymore? Why are he and Hanifin playing so well? Why are all these guys who like, they suck or like not bad anymore because they have a role. They know what they're trying to do. They like, fuck.
Yeah. They have a very clear cut role. The expectations are you execute your role, otherwise you're not playing. But the ask isn't Daryl Sutter knows what each player is capable of. And then the ask is everything that you're capable of, nothing more. Right.
Yeah,
he's not asking Lucic to go out there and score 30 goals,
even though he is,
right? But that's what happens when you're allowed to just do your role. So it's interesting to see a little bit of transformation happening with Sean Monahan currently.
Well, and Daryl did say something. I don't know if we're going to throw it in, but he was talking about Gaudreau and Tkachuk and Lindholm specifically, saying like how much they've grown since he took over. And he was just saying like, if you're a coach, you coach the group you have. You can't come in and try to impose something that's not going to work with the group you have. And I mean, all I could think about was like, well, that's exactly what Jeff Ward tried to do to Gaudreau and Monahan for like a year and a half. It was like, hey, we want you to be play driving defensive players. And that, like, that's not what they are. And they sucked. They had a rough stretch there.
Did you see the stats that Sportsnet threw up on the screen? I think it was last night. Comparing the defensive metrics under Jeff Ward, who apparently that's when we became a defensive team, to the actual defensive metrics under Daryl Sutter. It was like dead last to first.
We're the best defensive team in the league right now. I was just looking through Jay Fresh Hockey's data this morning. The Flames are the best teams in terms of goals against right now. They are the best team in terms of goals for percentage at 5-on-5. They have the best goaltending duo at 5-on-5. They are third best in expected goals against. Not bad.
That's pretty good, eh?
Not bad at all.
But these players, though, totally uncoachable.
Bums.
Which we've always been saying the opposite. No, it's the opposite. They're too coachable. If Jeff Ward tells them to skate the puck in backwards into the offensive zone, they would do it.
Like, have you heard Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan? It's like, yeah, I'll do that. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
do whatever he wants.
I mean.
Well, yeah, if Jeff wants me to skate backwards into the offensive zone, I mean, it's just what I got to do for the team. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, do what the coach tells you. I mean, yeah. This was hilarious, dude. Did you see this? This was pre-LA Kings, Daryl's big return to the big city. And Jonathan Quick, did you see that quote?
Saw it.
Fuck, this is funny, folks. Listen to this. This is Jonathan Quick. Daryl threatened to feed me to his pigs if I didn't stop the puck in practice. He was serious about it. I let one puck during a drill, and he stopped the practice, skated over to me, and then took off my blocker. He grabbed my ring finger and said, "This one is Otis's favorite finger. Otis is the prized Sutter pig. I stopped every puck after that. He haunts my dreams." See, this is the magic of management. This is the magic of coaching. You have a push-pull relationship, right? You know when to push. You know when to pull. You know when to bitch slap. You know when to coddle. And he does it all. Because then after that, he says, after that practice, then I come out of the dressing room, he's holding my baby in the hallway, telling me how cute he is. chumming it up with my family, right? It's just like Richardson said it in the interview. He's honest. That's all you can ask for. Remember when Jeff Ward was like shithouse to penthouse? And remember Sam Bennett explaining, yeah, no one's really even said anything to me. I'm not really sure what's happening.
Yeah, I don't know why I didn't play.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't know. No one's really said anything. I don't know if it's mind games. When a player, your highest draft pick of all time, playing in your organization, struggling year after year, you got this amateur coach in there, and he's going, and the player is saying, I don't know if the coach is playing mind games with me or not. No one's communicated dick. Complete opposite with Daryl Sutter. This guy knows people, he knows players, and he knows hockey. And fuck, does he know coaching?
And boy, is it paying off.
No one predicted this. I'm sorry. We knew the team would be a hell of a lot better under Daryl Sutter. We knew that the team would be a hell of a lot better without Jeff Ward, number one. But fuck, we're first. We're tied for first in the league, folks. After how many games has it been?
25.
And we've been at the top of the league for what, 4 weeks now? 5 weeks? It's just like this team is not going to fall off the face of the earth. I don't know if we stay in the top five all season long, but you heard Richardson. Daryl stresses that every game is a must win.
Well, he was even saying that. I think somebody asked him, like, blah, 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 you've been playing so well. And he's like, 35 points doesn't mean shit, or however many points they had at the time.
Yep.
Like, you need 90 points to get in the playoffs. So he's like, 31 points doesn't mean shit. Like, he obviously didn't say that, but that was the gist of it. It's like, there's still a lot of work to do.
Every point matters. Man, like, he's Daryl Sutter, man. Like fuck.
There's a reason you forget after all this time, but there was a reason that there was like in Sutter we trust, and like this fan base had such a hard on for this guy back in the day, because, and even I forgot how much I loved this guy, you know?
Everybody forgot, and the whole world forgot. And if you weren't a Flames fan, then you sure as fuck forgot. I mean, look at all the the narratives when this guy was first hired, right?
It was like, what a mistake. Like, this guy's
a dinosaur. I remember getting trolled by Oilers fans. Ha ha ha, fucking dinosaur.
There was like every think piece written on how, like, oh, is Daryl Sutter's old school game gonna translate? It's like the first day Daryl's here, the media's asking him dumb questions, and he's like, what are you guys talking about? You're like living in 10 years ago, like schooling them on new tactics and shit and how the game has evolved. It's like he's never left the game and he's always been this way. I remember when we did the show at like 2 a.m when he was first hired and we were freaking out. It was like, that was the point we were making, is like, if you look at his career, he's never been what people say he is, which is like a dinosaur playing like this old school brand of hockey. It's like, just because he likes to have some big players on his team doesn't mean his tactics have never been, his tactics have always been progressive. I remember hearing him talk about like possession way back in the early 2000s and shit, when it was like nobody ever talked about that stuff. So he's always been like this.
Doesn't that just speak to his level of hockey IQ, is that people they're not even close to understanding?
Yeah, like they don't even know the right questions to ask.
No.
Well, they're learning, but
they're starting to learn that fucking just don't ask a dumb question. Just don't try to impose a statement onto Daryl Sutter. You'll get
ask a genuine question that you want the answer to. Don't try to have your little thesis statement in there and get him to talk about your dumb little thesis. Ask him because he knows his shit.
They're starting to learn because the media is getting sick and tired of having to walk out of there with the tail between their legs every fucking time, eh? It's fucking great. It's true, man. If you look at his track record, he's been at the Cup Finals four times. I mean, if you haven't listened to it, it's a 15-minute interview before he goes back to LA pregame. Just fucking, it's excellent. But he's talking about how while he was coaching, he lost. And he was very careful the way he worded it, because he didn't want to say he lost the passion for the game. But what he did say is that it just takes a lot out of you, because when he coaches, that's all he does. Like, he doesn't fucking even talk. It doesn't sound like he talks to his family. It's just like, I have one fucking thing on my mind, and that's winning the Stanley Cup. What do you think Jeff Ward thought about?
Practice playlists.
It's time, funny how the most common denominator of success for Jeff Ward was just having fun. And sure, I mean, you saw it, like, yeah, there's an aspect of that because it led to some success right off the hop. But it's not sustainable. You need more than just having fun.
Well, and that's a pretty pathetic standard too. Like, when he got here, and he emphasized this the other day, I don't know what I was watching, but he was talking about like how shitty this team was. He was like, I've watched this team for a long time, and you know what? They like weren't playing up to NHL standard. And that was one of the things he emphasized when he was rehired, was like, hey, the standard here is not good enough, like not nearly good enough. And back in 2003, when he was hired, it was like, that's what he was saying then too. It's like, and the Flames were a joke back then, and they were starting to become a joke again. And he's like, right. Like, what's your standard here? Stanley Cups, winning, or like having fun and being like a fun place to play hockey. Like, give me a break.
Yeah, and one of the main things he's emphasizing on that last interview with the current team before taking it over and watching them on TV is like pace. And he said, it's not that they're slow skaters. It's that they weren't playing with the pace you need to play at in order to play in this league now. And that was, we took what, 3 steps backwards under Jeff Ward. That was him implementing that fucking slow the game down. And fuck, did that bite us in the ass.
I can't even, like, remember the breakouts?
Oh, that was like the most painful hockey to watch of all time. That was worse than Gallatin. What was worse, the end of Gallatin era or the end of Ward era?
End of Ward era, I think.
I think by far.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Daryl talks about how he plays in Chicago. He's wired differently, man. And this is what we love about him. This is what makes him so unique.
Well, you know what? Just to, if you really want to do yourself a favor, go. There's an interview with him when he's playing in Chicago. And it's like in between it's like an intermission interview, and he's the captain of the team. And it's so good. Just YouTube that Daryl Sutter, like, interview Chicago. He's just like, man, Ernest wears his heart on his sleeve. What a guy. Like, when he's a player is what I'm talking about.
Yeah. And that's how he coaches too, right? He's saying that that's his team because he played there, Chicago there, won there. That's where he wanted to coach. He felt a duty to them. I mean, that's why he came back to Calgary. He felt a duty to Calgary. He
wants, owes him a debt.
He's only exist, you know, purpose for existing currently is to win a fucking Stanley Cup with the Calgary Flames. That's it. Wired a little differently. And I think he's got the tools to do it. I think my biggest point I wanted to make was, you're watching the games now where, okay, you're starting to see the most out of what's Gaudreau on pace for? Close 90, to
90 plus.
Close to his career high, right? What's Tkachuk on pace for? Going to be close to his career high. Lindholm.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I guess that's outside of that. Mangiapane, obviously. I mean, are we seeing a resurgence of Sean Monahan? Is he going to keep him with Blake Coleman? Like, Coleman scores last night. He's been looking good the last 3 games. But you look at this team and you're like, fuck, man, we're so much more skilled than we were in 04. In 04, we had one skilled player.
Like, that's not even an exaggeration.
And one talented-ass goalie. But the rest were just muckers, right? But Daryl found a way to make that work. We have way more skill. We have a lot more talent. We don't have as much of a muck to us, right? But he's starting to instill that into him. So it's going to be interesting to see how this continues to develop.
Well, just talking about Monahan, it sure makes a difference when he's an impactful player in the game like he was last night.
That was easily his best game of the season, was it not?
No, it wasn't even close.
So you picked him as the top performer.
It could have been Coleman too, I thought. I just, when Monahan like last night, like, because here's the thing with Monahan. I don't know if it's a confidence thing or what, or if he's just not comfortable. But for the majority of this season, anytime he gets the puck on his stick, he does not look like he wants to have the puck on his stick.
I agree, but I think the last 3 or 5 games, he's starting to hold on to the puck a little bit more.
Yeah, totally.
He's starting to make better, smarter plays. He's starting to make plays. He is.
And you saw that last night. Like, when he had the puck, there was one shift in the offensive zone or his line with Coleman and Lewis had were putting the pressure on the Ducks. And he was like, he was hunting pucks down and holding on to pucks. And it was just like, he's starting to look better.
Well, this is interesting. It's a good talking point because before the game, Darryl switches the lines around. And especially when, you know, in the first period, everybody looked out of sorts and you're just sitting there and you're down 1-0 and you're like, okay, why did he change the lines around? And that was kind of the biggest groan coming from Twitter was like, guy, we're in first place. Like, what are you doing? I mean, what we have is working. But let's just look at why do you think Darryl changed the lines? He moves Lucic up, which I don't necessarily think that was the impetus for the change. The impetus for the change was putting Coleman with Monahan, I believe.
Yeah, and probably paired with Dubé. He hasn't been super high on Dubé and Pitlick.
Exactly. Which that line did get benched for the entire third period, the fourth line of Dubé, Richardson, and Pitlick.
Yeah.
So, but because what is it? It's the third line. It's not doing shit, right? The third line, even though they had some really good shifts so far on this road trip before the changes happened, but they just are not generating enough, and they're just not finishing at all. So, I don't know what he's. Again, I don't question what Darryl Sutter does anymore, right? Or do I guess I still do, but then you just have to wait fucking a week to figure out that, oh, no, he's right again. But what did you think of moving – what did you just think of the third line as a whole, Monahan, Coleman, and Lewis?
Well, I liked it much better, and I think obviously a lot of it was driven by what Coleman was doing. But I think somebody on the broadcast definitely wasn't Cassie. But somebody made a good point with Monahan saying like he needs a guy on his wing who's super fast and can get him the puck. And definitely that Blake Coleman meets that criteria. So I don't know. I Lewis, sure. I don't know. Sutter really likes Lewis, even though his on ice impacts don't really do much for anybody. It was kind of funny on that goal that Coleman scored last night. I was complaining about it. I was like, you couldn't have played. Like, I don't know. I was like, what the fuck is Lewis doing? And then
this is the 3-on-2. Lewis just completely fucks it up. And then Monahan makes fucking
a great play. You couldn't have played that worse. And then they scored. So I don't know. I didn't mind it. Lewis is a guy who can work the puck once it's in the zone. So it's fine. But I think the Coleman Monahan pairing, like you said, is going to be something interesting to watch.
Yeah, that's the most intriguing thing coming out of that game. And who knows, maybe this actually becomes your second line. I'd be curious to see Monahan Coleman with Mangiapane. Yeah.
Which we saw in like one glimpse. Like we have barely seen any of that.
Yeah, but maybe if Coleman and Monty start clicking, because they've both been completely dry. You know, it's dry as the Sahara Desert out there. You heard us on the last podcast, Blake Coleman. Thanks for listening. Maybe his wife listens,
Yeah.
Give him the memo.
Blake,
you better pick it up. These guys are really harping on you.
Shit together, bro.
Blake, you're not earning that the $5 million that you're getting paid there, bud. So, I don't know. Interesting. But the LA Kings game as a whole, I mean, you said this before we jumped on here. There's three games that we're going to run through today. The Pittsburgh game where they went in a shootout 2-1. The LA game where they don't score first, but they come back and they take control of the game. And the Ducks game, I mean, you won all three of those games all three are different wins.
Which is like, which I think is something Darryl talks about. He's like, it's not necessarily the, you know, each night, like, you know, winning or losing. It's how you're playing in these games. And like, shit, dude. So you dominate the Penguins, but, you know, their goalie played great. And you win in a shootout. You kind of have a rough game against LA, 5-on-5. But your power play and special teams were great. And then last night, you grind out a win against the Ducks and win in a shootout again. It's just like, man, like, the good teams find ways to win. And that's how you win in this league. That's how the Lightning have been the best team in the league for the past 3 years, is they can beat you. Whatever the game is, they're going to beat you. They don't give it. It's like, it doesn't matter. They're going to win. There's no parameters for, like, this team can only win this way.
Yeah, exactly. That's what the media would tell you, though. Eh?
Yeah.
Well, the Ducks are dumping and chasing there, you know. Mm-hmm. But I was super impressed by both LA and Anaheim. You don't score first, but you still win both games. You actually, they take the lead in both second periods. So they have a good response. It's just so clear, it's so evident that the, man, the reason why we're gushing so hard about Darryl Sutter is like, A, the guy only cares about winning a Stanley Cup, and B, he knows how to do it, and C, he's getting everybody on board with him. Like, that's what we're seeing. You listen to any of these player interviews at any point, pregame, postgame, during the game, in the intermissions, whatever it is, the level of focus, and it's not even just like, oh, they're focused on the game. No, they're focused on whatever goals Darryl Sutter has laid out for them that are going to lead to winning. And they know, they just go and execute that one thing. There's no, like, they don't have to figure out how to win. Darryl Sutter knows how to win. He's instructed them how to win. All they have to go out is execute what they're being asked to do and look at the results they're getting. I don't see how you can't be excited right now if you're a Flames fan.
And, right, you're talking about these Anaheim and LA games being impressed. Like, it's nice to not have these dumb bullshit, like, well, if they don't score first, they're not going to win. Well, if they score first, they always blow it. It's like, no. No matter what's happening in a game, you know the Flames are going to play a certain way, and they're going to play well, and they always have a chance to win games because they're playing so goddamn well. And I mean, I think, did Lucic say this? He was talking, I can't remember. There's so much to listen to nowadays because it's so interesting to hear what these players are saying about Darryl, but I think it was Lucic. He was talking about, like, it's not even about we're not even being prepared to play the right way. We're being prepared to win games. Like, that's what the preparation is for. Yep. All that matters going into each game is, okay, we are, how do we win this game? Fuck.
Oh my God. Woo! It's orgasmic.
It is, like, honestly. Like, I never thought this team would be able to be this good. And again, it's only 35 points and a quarter way into the season, but this is what this guy's been able to do with a team that lost their best defenseman and didn't make any huge significant offensive additions in the offseason. Like, holy shit.
It's unbelievable, dude. And then, I mean, you lay out what you just said. Man, I'm excited because you have guys like, just take Matthew Tkachuk. Is this not the perfect scenario for a guy like Matthew Tkachuk? A guy that all he fucking cares about is waking up every day and winning a Stanley Cup. You know, not everybody is like that. Not everybody's wired like that. Matthew Tkachuk is one of those players who that's all he gives a fuck about. And so when you put him under a coach that knows how to do it and the rest of the team is buying in around him, oh, man, like –
Tkachuk has been so good this year. I don't think people realize how good he's been at 5-on-5. Not just like, and everybody look at his goals and his points and shit and be like, yeah, well, they're not great. The thing is, this guy's doing every night on a shift-to-shift basis. Like, he's been so good. Like, I mean, Gaudreau and Lindholm have been fantastic, and Mangiapane has been fantastic, and it shows up a lot more kind of like in the flashy sides of the game. And but, like, man, Tkachuk is just so good right now. Like, the way he's just, like, handling the puck. And, like, did you see him give Doughty the reverse? The old reverse just crushed him. Like, shit like that. Like, every time he's on the ice, he's just making such great plays. He's been such a force at 5-on-5 defensively. he's been fantastic.
He is thriving right now under Daryl Sutter. Well, everybody is.
Yeah, and like, I mean, come on, like, we're talking about getting excited. Like, every time that top line's on the ice, like, is that the best? That's the best top line in the league. It is. Like, who else is better? Maybe the Marchand line, but I don't even know. Like, they've been so good. They've been on the ice for like two goals against this year. I honestly think they're the best top line in the league right now, and I don't even know if it's particularly close. So like, did you see that goal Lindholm scored last night?
Oh man, fuck. It was so sexy, dude. Like, first off, he creates the turnover in the neutral zone. He has the wherewithal to control the puck on the blue line while he's kind of dangling a little bit. He knows to find Johnny. I mean, these guys are starting to gel. These guys know, hey, Johnny's coming in. Obviously, I'm going to dish it back to him and then just get ready for fucking whatever wizardry he's going to do next. Get open. That finish, though, fuck. John Gibson got lit up. Every single one of those goals was sexy. And John Gibson even played a great game, too.
I'm just so impressed with the draw with that top line.
Where do you go from here? This is where it's just like, dude, previous coaching, I'd be terrified right now.
Yeah.
You know the dip would be coming. You know the wheels are about to bottom out at some point. But with Daryl, I'm not scared one bit. Like, I'm so confident. Every game I get more confident in Daryl Sutter because he knows that, hey, look, I'm not saying there's not going to be challenges this season and there's not going to be dips and valleys, you know, that are just part of an 82-game season. But I don't see anything that comes at them that gets thrown at them. Knock on wood, right? I don't want to see any big injuries or anything like that. But that doesn't scare me. I don't – anything that gets thrown at them, they're going to be able to bounce back from because they have Daryl Sutter. He's going to be able to guide them through anything that gets thrown their way.
Well, and I mean, again, barring a huge injury, I don't see what could really derail this too much. Like, the scoring is still going to be an issue. But they're getting points and they're getting wins, and that's literally all that matters. Like, we have the most, we're tied for most points in the league right now. We have the fewest regulation losses. We have the best defensive metrics at 5-on-5. We've had a really tough schedule. Like,
we've been playing great teams.
I know, like, so. But where do you go from here? You just, you know, and that's the thing too, that I've liked that. Sure. There's been like a game or two where they haven't been at their best, but this has still been a progression.
Yep.
They're not leveling off. It's not a wild swing anymore. You know, it's like, they're just kind of slowly building. Maybe there's a setback, but it's like two step forwards, one step back instead of, oh, you leaped forward with a great game and then you fell through the floor and then were shit for 10 weeks. Like, it's stable.
You lose a game to Winnipeg and you bounce back with three straight wins.
Yeah. That's the difference in a nutshell with this team right now.
Is it safe to say that the only two players not currently thriving under Daryl Sutter are Dylan Dubé and Val Mackey?
Yep, I'm kind of surprised Dubé is struggling so much.
I'm not concerned about Dubé. I just think that it is a confidence thing with him. I mean, have you ever seen him not? I mean, he's been completely invisible, irrelevant.
Yeah, I haven't seen him do anything.
3-4 weeks. The typical Dubé is all he uses is burst of speed, comes in and creates something. He's just been. I don't. Maybe Daryl doesn't have him in the proper role. I don't know, but I'm not concerned because I know Dubé is a great player and he'll probably be able to utilize the situation. Maybe he needs to play in the AHL for a bit. I don't know.
Well, he's been bounced around position wise too, playing center, playing wing. I think the role thing is part of it. I'm just surprised he's not thriving a bit more in the Sutter system, because he's such a fast player. He's such a dynamic player. He's a good forechecker. You'd think this would be only highlighting and progressing his game. So,
but he doesn't seem to be using those attributes.
No, I know. I haven't seen him be a beast on the forecheck much this year, but
I haven't seen previously. Him wheel through the neutral zone much at all. That's the typical Dubé we're used to. He's got a hell of a shot.
He has all the tools. It just doesn't seem to be having a hard time putting it together. So,
I mean, we've talked about this before on this podcast. There is room for magic if you're on the fourth line, because your role gets so reduced down to one that's so simple.
Yeah.
That then you can rebuild your game from that. I mean, that's what Lucic has done. So maybe Dubé can go through a similar process. Okay, all I have to do is X, Y, Z. That's it. That's all that's being asked of me.
Yeah.
So then every night, you know, that's all I got to do. It makes your game easier, right? And if you keep doing that, then you can start to add a little bit to it once you get the X, Y, Z honed in. I don't know.
Well, and, you know, we have seen this from Dubé before, where it's like he's never really been able to put together a large stretch of hockey games where it's like he is effective. It's been kind of like reverse of Mangiapane, where it's like he's looks great one night and then, or even for like a few games at a time. And then he's never really been able to hold his own 5-on-5 in the NHL for an extended period of time.
Yeah. On a consistent basis.
Yeah. Like his inconsistency has been a primary part of his game. How old is he now? 23, 24.
Yeah. He's still pretty young. Yeah. Thoughts on the Valimaki getting sent down?
Well, how can you not at this point? Like, he can't just sit in the press box. He needs to play. And I mean, you kind of forget that how little he's actually played over the past, what, 2-3 years? A couple of huge injuries. Like, he's barely played.
Yeah, it's true.
So he needs to play. I don't, whatever. I don't think he's been great. I don't think he would be any worse than Erica Branson or Nikita Zadorov, but in their roles, Sutter seems to want them in their roles. And like, he's 23. He's barely played. He needs to play. The thing that I didn't understand, I thought he was waivers exempt, I guess. Which I didn't think he was.
Does that mean he's on a two-way deal?
I don't even know if he is on a two-way deal. Isn't he on a one-way deal? I didn't get that. I couldn't.
Maybe it's is he still in his ELC?
No, because he just signed that deal, remember? So I think I just was kind of looking at it before we came on. It's got something to do with like games played or some shit, because last season was shortened. But it's weird that he was that they were able to avoid waivers. And like, you know what my thought is. Is that I don't think the Flames knew he was waiver exempt.
They just figured it out, eh?
Because the day before, they transferred Kuznetsov to the queue so they could make space for Valimaki. I don't think they knew he was waivers exempt. Like I honestly didn't. But I don't know if the Flames did either.
So about Valimaki, Daryl says he's a young guy. He's got to play. He's got to play lots.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Daryl thinks that he got ahead of the curve a little bit. Hey, if you're going to be playing on a Daryl Sutter team, then yeah, that's probably rings true.
Well, you know what? I think that's true because like, even with us, like everyone was like anointing him. He kind of got this reputation and like this preemptive spot before he had really done much, right?
True. Yeah.
Like, cause I mean, I think he was off to a great start in that 2018-2019 season and before he got hurt. So I'm not saying he hasn't earned anything and he still has lots of potential. And then, you know, that injury really screws him up. He doesn't play a lot, but then remember when the shutdown was going on, he was playing over in Sweden and it looked amazing. Everybody's raving. Brad Living's talking publicly about, oh, I can't trade him for Mark Stone, shit like that. So it's kind of like these expectations and and a spot on the team has kind of been bestowed upon him before he's really done much in the league. And I don't think that's fair to him. And I don't think that's fair to, you know, other guys playing on the team. So I agree with that.
You literally took the words right out of Daryl's mouth. Daryl says he's got to get back to earning it and showing it rather than have it bestowed upon him.
Oh, shit. I must have heard that because that must have been in my brain from Daryl. There's no way I would have.
He says that, to be quite honest, he got beat out in training camp by Shillington, not Zadorov, which we all knew.
Yeah, we all knew that, right?
Yep.
But if he was as good as, right? Like, that's the standard now. Like, if he was as good as Shillington, who has been fucking great, he'd be on this team.
Shillington's so good.
And I guess there is an argument to be made about, like, oh, well, he would be better than Zadorov. But in that role that Daryl wants Zadorov in, I don't know.
Do you think Valimaki's happy now? What do you think he'd prefer?
Happy, like, peppy?
Think he'd prefer to go down and just play a shitload? Probably. Hey, at this point, if you're just kind of coming in out of the lineup and you've just been out forever now.
I imagine playing is way better than not playing.
Yeah, it's probably a bittersweet, right? But here, I want to add this quote in here too. Have a listen to this. This is about Daryl and just the way he views ice time as a whole.
Not just the skill to be able to do it, but what does it do for a team when you have guys that are so willing and eager to play in whatever role that you're at this being asked of?
Well, it's about ice time. You know, I know that I heard that last year was a big thing. The guys aren't playing as much, or he's not playing as much as he did for somebody else. Well, if you look at it, actually, wingers, if they are the top wingers in the league, will play, and you do it even strength, and everybody always goes, well, the total minutes, so that's fine. So a guy doesn't kill penalties, so most centermen do, most wingers don't. So there's 2 or 3 minutes a game. Or 3 shifts, which depending on how the kill goes. But the next part is the top wingers in the league, guys are elite in terms of goal scoring. They are high teens. The next group is 15, 17, right? So where our wingers are, some of them are scoring a little bit more now, so they push into that 18, right? But if they're not, then they go back into that where they should be. And that's what you're trying to do is get there. You're trying to get quality, very simple. That's really clear, especially this year with schedule.
You're telling me this guy doesn't understand analytics? I mean, all he's saying is you play the percentages, you play the averages, the law of averages. You have the right guys out there enough times for the most times. It's going to translate into better metrics as a whole, more 5-on-5 domination. More puck possession leading to goals. I mean, I want to throw that in there because it just, again, speaks to a level of understanding of not only hockey, but managing your team. Could you imagine like Jeff Ward ever like even conceiving of what Daryl was just talking about?
No, I can't imagine Gullitson or Bill Peters doing it either.
They would probably listen to that 20 times and be like, what?
Huh?
Huh?
What?
Whoa. Season's turned around, right?
Totally turned around. Well, all we did, you know what the key was? We just gave the boys a beer on the train. That turned the whole season around.
It's like, Glenn, you got swept
in the playoffs. What are you talking about?
I just had to, you know, toss my stick into the second bowl, and that was all we needed to do. And this isn't about bashing Jeff Ward and Glenn Gullitson.
Yes, it is.
It's the fact that the amount of pain that we as fans had to sit through because of these two dumbasses.
Well, and because of dumb upstairs is stupid bullshit hirings.
That when the opposite comes along and all of us can say, see, those guys were in over their heads. You know, you've been saying this a lot. It's just like, imagine if we hadn't wasted 3.5 fucking full seasons on amateur coaches, what we could have accomplished. That's why we bring it up again and again and again. Because the pain hasn't been long enough.
Hasn't been gone yet. And we're bitter about it.
Still bitter.
Yeah, I'll never not be bitter.
But I mean, like, look, like the hockey IQ on this guy, the knowledge is just like.
Well, he's a fucking NHL coach, right? Like, that's that's what I was saying before. When like these media guys, they're like, and they're learning. Well, we can give them credit for that, but they're like asking, like, well, what is this? You mean if you play, like, he's just a hockey coach. Like, this is what it should be. There's a level of professionalism and hockey knowledge you expect out of, you know, a guy coaching in the best hockey league in the world. Fuck. Finally. It's like we say these guys are amateurs because they have been.
And I mean, for anybody that really, I mean, here's the big argument pushback we had, right? Because it was just like, Jeff Ward's an amateur, get rid of him now. And it would, by the end of Gallatin, it was the same thing. And then you have the media saying, no, it's not. It's the players. They've been through five coaches. How could it possibly be the players? I mean, how could it possibly be the coaching? It's the players. There's been through five of them. But then you're like, okay, yeah, but who out of those five coaches is still coaching in this league? Who was a bona fide, totally competent head coach?
The thing we always said when Ward was still around, and probably Gallatin and Peters too, if those guys are let go, does one of 32 teams now in the league make them their head coach? Not a fucking chance. And that is zero. True. I mean, zero. Bill Peters just got fired from his Russian team.
Bill Peters has fired Glenn Gallatin and Jeff Ward, demoted back down to assistants. Mike Keenan, I don't even know. Is that guy still alive?
Oh, fuck, dude. Didn't he go to Russia at some point? Yo, you know what? The Mike Keenan year was actually kind of fun. Because holy shit, did the Flames, like, I remember that. That was weird because he was like, he was a weird guy and a weird coach. Like, I remember them talking about, like, in practice, they didn't practice. They just literally would scrimmage all game or all practice. Like, he had no system. It was fun. It was frustrating to watch. I think that was one of the years Iggy scored his second 50th goal season, and they scored like crazy because, like, it was just like, yeah, just go play. It was weird. But yeah, Jim Playfair, isn't he in? Like, where did he go? Like, we've had one real head coach in 20 years.
Hartley was pretty good. He's won a cup. Yeah, out of the five before,
yeah,
Sarah Sutter, probably Hartley has been the best.
And yeah, man, poor Jay Feaster sure gets a lot of shit.
Jay Feaster, man. That guy is laying in his bed that he made.
Hey, man, his team pretty much won us the playoffs. The only playoff series we've won in 20 years. Like Johnny, like Manny, like Hoods.
Hoods, like Box, like Granny. Hey, Granny. Remember Granny? Who's in net?
Like, what did he call Hiller and like Hiller? Like Hilly and Rams, Carey.
Love it. All right, let's get to the Anaheim game, break it down. We're going on reverse order here today.
Everyone, we'll get back to the show in just a moment. Just a quick word from our sponsor, DraftKings Sportsbook. This one is for all you NFL fans. DraftKings is an official sports betting partner of the NFL, and they have a wicked promotion going on right now at Sportsbook. New customers who bet just $1 on any team to score can win $100 in free bets. It's really easy. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, you can still get on the NFL action with Daily Fantasy. Everybody can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contest. DraftKings is giving away to new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. So all you gotta do is download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now, use the promo code THPN, bet $1 on any team to score, and win $100 in free bets. They score, you score with promo code THPN. This week, DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. You got to be 21 years of age or older in New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. There's a minimum $5 deposit and a $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
So, I got the game stats here. Or do you want to go through it?
Sure.
These are game stats that you put together. I know you do a lot of work on these. I'll let you take it away.
All right. So the Flames outshoot the Ducks 36-34. We only get one power play again last night.
Again, what is okay? This is something that's starting to become interesting. I mean, it's not causing us losses, but why are we like okay? You get four power plays in LA. That's a little different story. But for the most part, like the last what eight games, we're either getting zero or one power play a game. Is that just because we're at the top of the league and we're always dominating, so there's a lot of game management or what?
Maybe we're just so goddamn fast the other team can't catch up with us to have any stick infractions against. But they kept like they missed that high stick on Kachuk last night. Like
yeah, they're missing calls.
They're terrible.
It's not that there aren't penalties, they're just not calling them.
Anyways, the old Jeff Ward power play goes 1-for-3 last night for the Ducks. Flames 0-for-1. Shot attempts pretty even. Flames 53, Ducks 51. Scoring chances favor the Ducks at 31-27. The Flames did have the edge in high danger chances, 14-12. That was a high event game last night. Like that first period was a bit out of control, eh?
Yeah, it was. I mean, the like we said, the Ducks actually looked good.
Yeah, it looks really good.
Well, look, we played them early on in the season, the first week, I think, where you're just kind of like it's a bit of a wet wash. You never really know who's who and who's what. But I can see why they have a winning record, and their power play is good. I can see why their power play is third in the league. Like, that's a good team over there.
That was a great goal. That's a hell of a setup there.
Yeah, cross ice one-timer. Fuck, I wish we would try that.
Just once. Top game scorers from last night's game. Elias Lindholm, Chris Tanev, Sean Monahan, Johnny Gaudreau, and Matthew Tkachuk.
Fuck.
That was Monahan's best game by a mile.
We talked about the goals. First one's from Coleman. A little sweet dish from Monty. Like, come on, that's a hell of a play from Monahan, dude.
That's a great play, man.
To corral that in tight, right onto the stick of the guy who's going to have a wide open net. That's a great fucking goal.
And what a relief for that Coleman finally scored, because, like, we've been complaining about it. It's not that he hasn't been generating chances, because he has. He just can't bury it. And it was funny, that's the one that went in, but thank God he's got one. Now he's just got to get on a roll here.
The Lindholm goal, my brother pointed this out. We were watching the game together. If you go back a bit, before – no, this is the Monahan goal I'm thinking of. On the Monahan goal, if you go back a bit, before Lewis fires it down to Monahan in front of the net, Shillington on the
– yes.
On the break-in, the entry, he makes an unbelievable play where someone rifles the puck over to him, and he has to reach behind him to tip the puck. Mm-hmm. Off the boards up to Lewis. Like, it was an unbelievable play that very few people noticed. But you noticed that, eh?
Well, dude, every time Shillington makes a play, was that when you texted me, you were just like, Shillington is so fucking good?
Yeah.
It's true. Like, he's really good with
the puck. It's unreal how good he is.
Yeah.
The Lindholm goal, we talk about a fuck that sexy is a sexy comedian. Gabranson has a mental fucking... This is the thing, though, eh? That's like what, one of three mistakes he's made all season. You can't even get mad at him.
Yeah.
But Tanev did it last game too. It's just like, what are these guys doing? It's like
Tanev had a few. He blew his
Tanev was a little off last night.
He fell over like four times in overtime. So
yeah, that's right. So they go to overtime again, go to shootout again. Vladar was solid, just like
Marky was solid. He was awesome in the first period and awesome in the shootout.
Quietly, he has another great game because there's so much else going on. But fuck my God, dude, these two shootout goals. Oh,
dude, Johnny's found a new shootout shot.
Okay, I think we talked about this on one of the last podcasts. It doesn't even matter if the scouting report's out. Look at the tiny little, it's like a what, 6-inch by 6-inch square that he just places the puck in every single fucking time. Like, Gibson, you can see it on Gibson's face. Gibson knows Johnny's going there, but you still can't stop it because it's a perfectly placed shot.
It's a wicked shot. And it's not even hard or like necessarily fast. It's just so, that's a good shot.
It's accurate as fuck.
And it's shit, dude. Like, I'm just Matthew Tkachuk and Johnny Gaudreau. It's nice to be able to have your best guys out there and be like, yeah, they got this.
And then Chucky comes down with the old Forsberg one hand. Look, oh, that was
sweet.
That was sexy, but I'm way more impressed with Johnny Gaudreau's goal.
Yeah, me too.
Chucky gets the flash, but fuck, man. the ability to score. It's literally a 6x6 inch little square that Johnny's sniping in every single time. It's unbelievable. So I don't know
I love shootouts. Just I want to put that out there.
Well, we've won back to back in the shootouts. So
I don't understand how people don't like the shootout. Is there a more intense / exciting spectacle in sports than a shootout in the NHL?
Yes, it's called 3-on-3 overtime.
Well, yes, but we just got five. That overtime was fucking brutal.
Yeah, what the hell, eh?
That was the worst overtime I've ever watched in my life.
They were one of those. They became one of those teams that just didn't even want to try and score. They just brought it back and back and back. Eh?
Well, it was like I know Backlund makes that one play after Tanev trips or whatever. But fuck, what was he doing out there? Holy shit, he was bad in that overtime.
You literally, whenever I'm watching 3-on-3, I'm just like, okay, give it to Lindholm or give it to Johnny.
Exactly. Like, everyone else sucks at 3-on-3.
Yeah. It's like, if you're the weakest link, why do you still have the puck?
Although,
to Johnny.
Although Anderson has learned, because he's bearing down the right wing boards. I thought he was going to blast it 40 feet wide again and lead to an odd man rush the other way, as he's done every fucking 3-on-3 this year, but he didn't. So he's learning.
I'm still waiting for Daryl to put Shillington up with Johnny and Lindholm. I think that's the easiest way to score a goal, is it not?
Yeah.
And look at the speed on the three of those guys.
Exactly.
If you really want to play it safe, go Johnny Coleman.
Did Coleman even play in overtime?
I don't think so.
Yeah, that's weird.
And then remember the one shift where it's like it was Monahan, Tkachuk, and Rask. Like your three slowest guys.
I literally almost shit my pants.
Your three slowest guys are like, how are they not going to get scored on?
Holy cow. It's like, wow. You might as well throw Lucic and Gabranson if you're going to do that.
Right? I don't know. That's a pretty impressive win. Like we've said, they're finding ways to win different games. And that's a back-to-back. That's back-to-back against the Ducks team.
I would have been happy with a point last night.
Totally happy. But you're looking at it and you're like, fuck. I mean, one of the things they've been talking about in these pre- and post-game interviews is now the players are instructed by Daryl. They know what to say. They know what their goals are. How important these divisional games are and taking points away from your additional divisional opponents. So you love the regulation win in LA, and then you love taking another point away from Anaheim on a back-to-back. That was fucking awesome.
That was great.
So Monahan has 2 primary points, goal and assist.
Sean.
Hey, that used to be me.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, it's nice to get one. I shit you guys not. My impression is spot on, because if you listen to Monahan's pressers, he starts every sentence with, well, yeah, or yeah.
He says, yeah, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah,
Fucking real.
It's like, Sean, what are you going to do for Christmas? Yeah, I mean. Hey, Sean, what's your favorite color, red or green? Red. Hey, Sean, what's the size of your shoes? Yeah, I mean, hey, Sean, like, what kind of stick?
You're not even exaggerating, though.
Sean, what kind of stick do you use? Yeah, I mean,
it's unreal.
Unreal. Sean has a 5v5 Corsi 4. Is this Corsi 4 or expected goals? 62.86.
Yeah. And I mean, I think playing with Coleman helped him a lot.
Last night. Like, is that a big problem here? Like, look at the top line. Johnny gets to play with Lindholm. Like,
yeah, come no, on, it's not good. A problem. This is exactly what, and you saw the difference it makes when Sean Monahan's a difference maker on your team.
Oh, big time. But I am concerned about Lucic in the top six on that. I think he's out of sorts with, he's not going to be able to keep up with Backlund Mangiapane, man, is he? No. I mean, he does have a little bit of a chemistry with Backlund, it seems, but.
Well, then switch Monge and, Lewis.
Yeah. If Lewis is the spark plug, apparently. Yeah.
Lewis cracks and you have to watch him. It's like, that's goal was funny. It's like, he couldn't have fucked that up more and it went in.
I'm starting to like this guy, though.
No, I like him, but I like him in a funny way. It's like, oh, there goes old man Lewis again, just like working his ass off.
The 85-year-old is sure having a hell of a game tonight, eh? All right, let's go to the LA Kings game. You touched on it. You dominated them. The deserved to win in meter is 66% of the time to their 33.
Well, I know everybody was like, oh, there was a shitty game, but
it was a weird game. It was always weird in LA.
Yeah, like I thought the Flames were good and they were great on the power play, and I don't know.
Okay, give us the game report.
Okay, so Flames get outshot by 10, 42 to 32, but the power play goes 2 for 4, and you don't let LA score. They go 0 for 2.
There's your special teams wins the game.
So, yeah, and like this is a bit of a different – this is one of the first times the Flames were kind of outplayed at 5-on-5. The Kings win the possession battle with 63 shot attempts to the Flames 44. Scoring chances 32 to 29 in favor of the Kings, and high danger chances 13 to 11. Expected goals for share 55 to the Flames 44. So,
yeah, so you're slightly outplayed 5-on-5, but then you dominate special teams. So
yeah, you dominate special teams. Like, how many grade A scoring chances did Matthew Tkachuk have on the power play or just in general in that game? So
he loves playing Drew, hey?
Oh, I know. Yeah, I hope Brady goes after Drew next. That'd be awesome. But I mean, like, if you break it down 5-on-5, sure, the Kings played a pretty good game. And I actually I was actually impressed with both the Kings and the Ducks.
Yeah, no, they're on the up and up, these two.
Like, Ducks, you know who's a really good player who pissed me off we didn't get him is Arvidsson. Arvidsson looked really good.
Yeah, fucking Forsberg scores 4 goals there, Nate.
Yeah, fuck, dude. Like, if we just had one more guy, I would be like fucking unstoppable. Anyways, yeah, if you do like the little, because the Kings were trailing, you know, for some chunks of that game, you adjust for the score. The score effect was real in that game. They were pushing hard and good on them, but I mean that's a game. I think the Flames played a really good game, despite what the stats might indicate.
I have follow against the first one. Manji Pontius ties it up with the sweet little feed from Backlund, the little high play slot in the PP that
they love so much.
They love doing. Great finish by Manji Pontius. PP2 scores 2 power play goals. Lucci scores 5-hole again. Fuck, man. This 5-hole thing is getting hilarious, eh? But last night against the Ducks, everybody tried to go 5-hole for the first 2
periods. Yeah, what is the scouting report on Gibson? Like, what was that? That was weird.
And they were like terrible fucking.
Like Monahan's little backhand 5-hole chain. Like, what are you doing, bud?
Kachuk on the breakaway. Like, oh, that yeah, wasn't even terrible. Close. Fuck.
You and have to, if you're going to shoot 5-hole, the key is you got to fucking rifle it. Like Lucic has been doing.
Yeah. Like the guys are saying that he's the power 5-hole.
That's how you beat a guy 5-hole is you fucking rifle it. You don't slob it in a softy.
Kachuk uses Doughty as the screen to go up 3-1 and put you in a real good stranglehold. And, I mean, does it get much sweeter than that? You have your arch nemesis. Chucky's in his face all night again. He's doing the reverse hits. I love how it was funny. The broadcast was having a good laugh at it because they go back to the original hit against Doughty, right? The reverse hit, which was an elbow, which wasn't good. And then all the other reverse hits from now until we play him the other night. And he reverse hits him again, and they're like laughing. You're like, you think Doughty would expect this by now? He caught him again.
Oh, well, it's like, stay off the tracks, bitch. That's what it's like.
Fucking bitch.
But just a word on Lucic, like, goddamn. It's like, is every player that Brad, like, does Brad Schlevy have the biggest horseshoe up his ass of all time?
Or does he actually know what he's doing?
No, couldn't be.
No, because this is the guy that said Jeff Ward was the best guy for the job after he clearly wasn't.
Anything that happens is luck or a result of Daryl Sutter. Nothing to do with Brad Schlevy.
Well, look, and I've said this before, is as long as he eventually pulls out a horseshoe big enough so that the team succeeds,
exactly,
and instead of him just saving his own fucking ass,
yeah,
I'll be okay with his fucking horseshoe.
Right? It's like last year, right? It's like Tanev somehow miraculously usurps the age curve that affects like literally every player in the NHL and has like the most unbelievable comeback season of all time. And I'm sitting here with my thumb up my ass going like, fuck, I look like an idiot making Brad look smart, but the team was terrible and they didn't win shit. So it's like you're saying.
Yeah. Can we all benefit from your luck for once?
Can we benefit from this luck? That's all we want. But I mean, Lucic has, I just want to throw this in there because I think it's kind of crazy, is he has 17 goals in his last 79 games. So prorated for the last full season, he's almost a 20-goal scorer.
Suck it, James Neal.
That's wild.
Would you still pay him $5 million, though?
No.
But, hey, at least it makes it a little bit more bearable.
Makes it more palatable, yeah.
But, please, like, here's the other thing. He's executing that fourth-line role to a T.
Maybe you should trade him right now.
Okay. Look, I tweeted that, and I got...
Everybody probably almost... Yeah, I was going to say, geez, that's a sensitive...
The love affair this fan base has with him. Look, I love him, too.
I love him, too.
But I still... can be the voice of reason.
I'd rather have Philip Forsberg and be able to sign Mangiapane.
Tyler Toffoli. Fucking. Now is the time to trade him.
get Boston to take him. Right? Boston, DeBrusque for Lucic. Make it happen.
But when you're winning like this, it's really hard to argue that he's not a big part of their success currently. So we'll see how it plays out. I just hope the horseshoe is big enough. For all of us,
drop a Stanley Cup size horseshoe out of your ass, Brad.
Could you imagine? I think we talked about this before. Could you imagine Brad celebrating a Stanley Cup? No, yeah, we did because you're like, this is one thing I could never picture.
Yeah. Eh? Because when you're a fan, you always put things in your mind's eye, right? You think about, okay, what would it be like if they won the cup? Who would get it after a while? GL, like who would get it and shit? I was like, I can never picture that dweeb like out there on the ice with the boys, like lifting the cup.
What would he do? He'd do something like, remember Bomeister when he finally won something and he like lifted it up for like
millisecond,
a tenth of a second and just gave it away. It's just like, dude, like fuck. Joshua Brad, what would he do? Would he fall? Would he drop the cup? What would he do?
I'm trying to think of what it would encapsulate. Do something,
man.
He'd do something that would be like annoying. He
would
be clumsy.
You know what he would do? You know what he would do? He would win the conference final and the team decided they weren't going to touch it.
He'd
go over there and touch it by accident. Grab it. Shit.
Yeah, yeah. That's the way it would roll.
And then we'd get lucky or something.
We'd get the curse. Yeah.
Okay. True. What did you think of the Edler goal? So fuck, man. What is with the Calgary Flames and teams or players breaking their slumps against us? It's unfucking believable.
He hasn't scored in 400 years.
He's been sitting at 99 goals for 88 games. More than a full season. Oh, yeah. He's going to score tonight. Gets his 100th goal against us. Breaks that 88-game slump. No big deal.
88 games.
Is it because Dennis Wiedemann tried to murder a linesman? Is that why?
I mean, there's got to be some sort of karma from... aspect from then, because it really has been a lot of downhill since then.
And maybe that's why we get officiated every day.
Yeah.
The fourth line got pretty much caved in against the Kings, though. Hey,
well, that's the thing, they're getting caved in. They get caved in a lot, that fourth line, and that's what it's like. It's again, it's hard to argue. Like I was kind of saying with Lewis, is like his on ice impacts are like, all right. If it's the Lewis Richardson Lucic trio, they tend to get caved in a lot. So again, you can't really argue because Lucic is scoring all the fucking time, but I mean, they're not really doing much on the ice. So,
well, it's better that your fourth line's getting caved in than your first line, though.
Yeah. Like, I mean, they have the worst, that trio has the worst expected goals for percentage at sporting a 37. percent at 5-on-5 this year. So yeah, I'm not sure. Like I think Daryl, they've had a few good shifts where they're in the offensive zone, like grinding teams down and being physical and stuff, but I'm not sure where that's gonna go.
So I'm gonna keep an eye on how that develops. Eh? It's gonna be curious how these lines continue to evolve. I don't think Daryl has any, I don't think he's splitting up Monahan and Coleman anytime soon, dude. I think he's going to roll with that for a bit.
Yeah, I hope so, because that's Sean Monahan. It's the Sean Monahan you need.
And the Blake Coleman you need.
Yeah, totally.
Offensively speaking.
Well, dude, those guys finally score last night, and you win. Like, makes all the difference in the world.
So against the LA, Matthew Tkachuk, you have him as the top performer.
Oh, dude, he was chances. Fucking great.
11 scoring chances.
Like, fuck, was he good in that game? 11 scoring chances.
His expected goals for was 72.50.
Yeah.
And his he's just a monster. His Corsi Forge rounded up with 69. All well, making Drew Doughty his bitch. So,
and scoring the game-winning goal. A sick snipe.
Fuck, that feud is hilarious, isn't it? He's got to be so aggravating to play against, hey?
Can you imagine? He's such a little shit.
Zegras went after him. Yeah.
Yo, what the fuck? That was cheap shot.
It was weird, eh?
Just like cross-checks him right in the ribs.
And then, of course, we don't get a power play.
Yeah, like, I don't understand how that was offsetting. Like, ridiculous.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous. But great, great, again. To do that in regulation, that was what impressed me the most, was stealing 2 points from the Kings. There is one more clip I want to play against, or this is pregame before LA. Have a listen to this one.
Four really proven guys, and then three really proven new guys coming in. So, and they're young players, like, for example, Eiffel and Kempe are really good players. So they're in that age group of Mangiapane and our defense. So that's the test for, as I said, that is the challenge for your team when you play division games, is how do you match up as an individual against certain players.
I mean, how cool is that? This guy has layers. He's got layers to his coaching. He's got layers within layers to his coaching. He's instructing his team, look, here's the matchup for tonight. It's a divisional matchup. That means it's that much more important. Here's the key players you got to hone in on. Here's our players who need to match the level of these players. Mangiapane, you got to match Alfa. And that's going to be part of your assignment tonight. Again, could you imagine fucking Jeff Ward, Glenn Gulson even conceiving of this concept?
Well, what did he said like about goals, right? It's like, it doesn't matter if you accomplish your goal. It's that you have it. This is important.
Yeah, right. Oh, what's the
hey, what are we playing in practice tonight? Hey, let's just have fun, bitches.
Who's picking the playlist? That was like the big media thing, eh? It was like, okay, who's got the playlist? Who's picking the playlist today, boys? That was like the big thing, eh? The big thing to report on. Who had playlist selection? What was Raz? Remember, like, yeah, seriously, if you're on social media, you remember seeing this.
That's all that it was.
There was a tweet with what the playlist was, the five songs. Not even joking.
Like, I'm.
This was the Mickey Mouse clown
Mickey
show.
Mouse shit. It's like, I've got an article here from like November 29th of 2019, and it's just like, something new, a playlist of tunes greeted the players' arrival for work.
Rasmus chose the songs, says Coach Jeff Ward.
We felt that it was a way to loosen up a bit at the end of the day. The players just had a meeting with Tree, and we don't want that hanging over practice.
Yeah, we want to forget about that right away, eh?
Yeah, it's just a gimmick to lighten up the move, get the guys moving in their minds on practice.
I mean, wouldn't it be a that big of a deal if he didn't proceed to do it for another 2 or 3 weeks following? It's funny. I mean, like, there's a clip on Sportsnet the other day. I sent it to you. Milan Lucic, they're asking him. This is like probably a week or two back. And they're saying, like, what one of the biggest differences this season is the starts you guys get out to. What's been the difference? And Lucic says, well, I mean, I think I got to give the credit to Daryl. He has us prepared for every game, for the start of every game. Everybody knows what their assignments are. Yada, yada.
Right. That must have been what I was listening to earlier, because I think he says something about, like, we're prepared to win.
Big difference. Oh, yeah, we're prepared to play.
No, you're prepared to win.
Remember when... seriously, for about 3 weeks there, when this team absolutely stunk and all Jeff Ward could manage to capitulate was that we just need to play with more emotion. That would do it.
Just emotional engagement.
You just got to hate to lose more.
Have you heard that once this year?
You heard it once since Daryl Spinier? There's nothing to do with emotion.
It has so little to do with emotion that it's like, why would you, like, oh, God.
Yeah, you got to keep your emotion level at a 12 for an 82-game season.
This season is like the exhale after a big inhale. It's like we had to inhale all that bullshit last year. Every fucking night hearing that shit.
No, you know what it is? It's an exhale, a relieving exhale. It's when you're in an elevator, somebody fucking lays a fucking bomb. And you have to hold your breath. You don't want to smell it. You're holding and holding and holding it. You're watching the floor numbers go down to 3, 2. The door is open. And you're pulling a George Costanza. You're just pushing everybody out of the way. Oh, that's what that is. Eh?
Very well. Very well put.
Fucking Jeff Ward is leaving air biscuits in the dressing room, man. Pittsburgh, give us the game report for Pittsburgh.
Oh, shit, I forgot about the Pittsburgh game. Yeah, I got him.
Yeah, you got.
All right, so the Flames fucking dominated the Penguins. Oh, shoot them 32-22. But we didn't have a power play.
Of course
zero.
Not.
There was one power play in the game, and the Penguins got it, and they scored on it. Ridiculous. Shot attempt 62-30. Scoring chances 32-12. The Flames had more scoring chances at 5-on-5, 10 more scoring chances at 5-on-5 than the Penguins had shots in the game. High danger chances 11-4. Expected goals 4%, rounded down 75% to 25% for the Flames.
I think, look, we've played some good goalies. I think that was the best goaltender performance we've seen from an opposing team. There's been some good ones. But I think Tristan Jarry, that was the best we've seen all season. He was legit. I mean, the other good one was Nashville, Soros. But I think Tristan Jarry played even better.
Yeah, he was awesome. Top game scorers. 32 scoring chances.
32!
At 5-on-5 because we didn't have a fucking power play. Top performers for the night by game score are Shillington, Tanev, Hanifin, Ras Daddy, and Milan Lucic. But I picked Lindholm as my top performer because he had 9 shot attempts, 7 scoring chances, and 76 rounded down, 76%, 5-on-5. Expected goals, 4%.
76, man. Like, hey, 65. 65 is like domination. 75. Come on. It's not even fair. It's like fucking Connor McDavid level.
That's how you play defense, man. Remember when they were like, oh, defense. It's all about defense. You know, Daryl's like, no, it's not about fucking defense. That's not how you play defense. You play defense by having the puck and checking the puck when you don't have it. Fucking idiots.
Fucking numbnutses. What really impressed me there is the rebound after a tough loss.
Yeah.
And then I'm surprised that we dominated them so bad because it was the other way around in Pittsburgh. We got dominated 5-on-5, but snuck out a win. They almost did the same thing to us.
Yeah, they almost goalied us, but Backlund finally scores in the shootout for the first time in his life. Backlund, okay, yo, Backlund hit the net. I was impressed with him even hitting the net in that shootout.
I was impressed with him coming down, not falling on his face. Okay, so let's go through this. Lucic scores another 5-hole. And then you get into the shootout. 7 rounds? Okay, the first thing was Monahan goes first.
Yeah.
And at that point, this is the thing, eh? When these coaches pick their players, and I guess it would have been different if Monahan scored, but he didn't. But everyone's kind of like, Monahan, the guy's cold as ice. And I think it was, it was Bobby McGolf. I forget he changed his Twitter handle for the in season. It's a hockey game now, but he says you got to go with the hot hand. Like that's what you do in a shootout. You go with the hot hand. And the reverse is true. Don't put in the cold hands. This isn't about a feel-good story. This is about Monahan has looked like ass up until this point. Now, last night went to a shootout, which did. That's when you put Monahan in. We didn't see him. But we didn't need him. But anyways, is that how you felt with Monahan being the first pick in the shootout?
Because you knew he wasn't scoring.
No, that was a terrible attempt at a goal, too.
Like, does he not have a shot at all anymore?
He's coming back, baby. Hey, what? He would do this. What is he down to? 3 games now? My little leash that I've been giving him is dwindling down to 3 games, and he's maybe starting to show some life. He might just turn it around. So, Tkachuk goes down second. That was another terrible.
Terrible.
What are you doing?
Tkachuk is very hit or miss on shootouts.
True. It's either like he scores an unbelievable goal,
or it's like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah, it's like nowhere in between. Yeah. Johnny comes down. Fuck. God, he's good, man. Is this
dude, he's playing the best. I don't even think it's a debate anymore. He's playing the best hockey he's ever played in his life.
Yeah. And it's not that he's playing better than he's ever played. He's played this well maybe what, 3 or 4 times in the past where he's won those player of the month. He's just played unbelievable. He's playing that good. Mm-hmm. Mangiapane, 4th. Lindholm, 5th.
All terrible attempts, I gotta say.
I was surprised we didn't see Dubé because...
Yeah, he's a shootout guy.
He's a shootout guy. Shillington, another terrible attempt.
Terrible.
When Shillington comes down, I'm like, okay, I know he's playing good, but he hasn't been scoring enough goals. He doesn't have that much confidence to score.
Totally.
Then Backlund comes down, I'm like, I'm turning the TV off.
You were alive. Here's how it went for us. You were a bit ahead of me, and you're like, what did you say? You're like, fuck, I knew he wouldn't even hit the net.
Yeah, I tricked you.
And preemptively, I'm like, I knew that fucker wouldn't hit the net. What a piece of shit. And then he snipes it. I'm like, oh, shit.
Oh, man. And now, does that mean Backlund's going to start rolling? This is how Backlund operates, eh?
He's terrible or he's awesome. Not even terrible, but you know what I mean.
What's your favorite goal out of the 3? Or sorry, favorite game out of the 3?
I like that game last night.
Yeah, I think that's me too. I mean, it was the best game in terms of 2 opponents going at it and come out with a win. Like, that was a real good fucking, that's a good feel-good win, man. We scored some beautiful goals last night.
Some incredible goals. Like you said, I like watching Anaheim was fun. That was a fun game. And just the manner in which they won. And that's a game that I wouldn't have even minded losing in overtime or a shootout. So. That's a good game. And the fact that you won it is just like cherry on top.
Sweet little cherry. Okay, so let's last conversation to have here. Actually, before we do, what do you think of the full pension line? Did you hear about that?
Who said that? Because holy shit, is that the exact way to put it?
Richardson. He's like, yeah, my buddies are calling us the full pension line.
Fucking brilliant.
But they got broken up, so.
Well, again, like we said, I don't like, they get creamed every night, it seems. So if Lucic stops scoring, I don't know. We'll see, because I like Lucic and Backlund, yes. Lucic, Mangiapane, and Backlund, no, as your second line. I don't know. If Lucic keeps scoring like this, though, like, I don't know.
Okay, last little conversation I want to have, because we talked about this. Where do you go from here? I'm not worried, but there is one thing. And this is just kind of like, again, from past trauma. It's like Calgary Flames organization has that. If something can go wrong, it's going to go wrong. At this point, with the way we're playing, with the way we're rolling, if it continues, do you even want to participate in the Olympics? Do you want NHL players to participate in the Olympics? You're going to have your top line, Lindholm, Johnny.
They're going to have tons of guys going.
Chucky, Markstrom. Does Anderson go?
Does Backlund go?
Does Coleman go? That's looking, could be a lot of players. Mangiapane go?
At this rate.
Now,
all of your best players will be going.
I'm not concerned about the team stinking after the break. I'm not. If it was any other coach, I would. But there's no distraction let up from Daryl Sutter. My only concern would be, okay, if we have that amount of players going, Is there a risk of injury? Is there a risk of fatigue? Could that be something that is a detriment to this team?
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to it, and I'm not a big Olympics guy anyways. I think it's a totally valid concern because Tkachuk, like all those guys are going to be playing pretty big roles on their respective teams. Like maybe probably not Mangiapane. Like if he makes the team, he's probably an extra or whatever, even though he should make the team out of merit, but whatever. Like Johnny and Tkachuk are locks. Lindholm's a lock. Markstrom's a lock. You think Markstrom's not going to be playing all those games over there? Like, come on.
Exactly.
So I think it's totally a valid concern.
Is Markstrom the number one Swedish goalie?
Oh, totally.
Who else? The guy, eh?
Yeah.
Guess Lundqvist is gone.
You know what? I don't even like. I get the. I've never been like. Why don't the NHL? I get that. Like, it fucks up the whole season. The NHL gets no revenue from it. All the risk is on the players. I get the players like it, but it's stupid to just to interrupt your season like that.
Well, you say you're not a big Olympics guy. I don't. I am on the other fence.
I like the World Cup. Like, do a World Cup of hockey. That's what I don't get that. Like, you can still have the international aspect and have the world. Like, what's the biggest sporting event in the world? It's the World Cup in soccer. Do it for hockey. You don't need it in the Olympics. Give me a break. I've soured a bit on the Olympics, I have to say.
Well, and the thing is if you got Connor McNeckbeard as your captain,
yeah, fuck, I'm not cheering for Canada. I'm fully on board with this. I'm not cheering for Canada.
you've made your stake, eh?
I have put my position in the ground. I'm not cheering for Canada. Maybe if Mangiapane is on the team, I'm not cheering against Gaudreau and Lindholm and Markstrom and Rass and all these guys. Fuck that. I'm not cheering against them for Connor McDavid. Give me a break.
Yeah,
the only no.
You'd rather see Connor McDavid lose at the expense of your country not winning a gold, right?
Exactly.
I feel like I'm in the same boat, but I think I know myself too well. As once the Olympics starts, I'm cheering Canada.
No, screw that.
It's like mentally, I want to tell myself. It's just kind of like, you know, when you do a New Year's resolution, you're going to work out. You heard Jim Gaffigan's bit. I'm going to work out every day. Day two rolls around. Well, not every day. Day three, I'm fine with the way I look. It's like, I'm not cheering for Canada. Game one. Oh, fuck, Canada's playing. I want to watch this. Game two, I'm all in, baby.
Like, unless Mangiapane's on the team, because like, I don't even like half those guys on that team. Like, I like Braden Point. He's a Calgary boy. But, nah, screw all them. Don't like them. And you know what? The only reason I ever really liked watching Team Canada when I was a kid is because of Jerome McGinley. And, yeah, No. I'm cheering for the USA and Sweden. I'm a Flames fan, and that's all that I am.
Yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting. I want to tell myself that I won't, but I probably will.
And if the Olympics weren't such a corrupt thing, I probably would be like, because I think my mind changed on this in the World Cup when they had Team North America. Because I was like, when that happened, initially I was like, that's so dumb. Who wants to watch? And then you watch like that young team, and like McDavid was on that team too. But you watch them play like Gaudreau and McKinnon and all those young guys. It was fucking unbelievable. And I was like, who cares what country they're from? This team is so much fun to watch. I'll cheer for them.
It's going to be interesting. Do you think that, because now they're saying, well, it's not a for sure thing. What do you think Bettman's going to allow it to happen? What's going to happen? I mean, the players want to. They held out in the last one. They're probably going to. Are they going to use some COVID protocol loophole Bettman might do, and be like, oh, you know what? Just can't do it because she's probably gonna say no and then blame it on COVID, would be my guess.
I imagine they will go, but the thing is, like, I get, not that I'm in favor of Bettman, he's a dipshit, because like the Olympics are great for the growth of the sport, but I get it. It's like the NHL can't use any footage. They can't even put on their website, the NHL website, there's an Olympic hockey game featuring the NHL players. Like, it's so fucked up, but I get why the owners and shit would want their players to go. So
okay, so you got two games left on the road trip. Vegas coming up on Sunday.
Whew.
Tough roadie. Then you got San Jose. They're playing well. This is the best San Jose's been in a couple of years.
Yeah, and I'm not super surprised that San Jose's not terrible, because they still have some good players.
They do. Some players that we'd like to almost get on our
team. Yeah, we could almost get Thomas Hertl.
almost get Timo Meier. And I guess he's probably locked up, eh?
Can almost get, we'll probably end up almost getting Kane too, because you know Brad is in on everything.
Vegas is an interesting one. Did you see Jack Eichel?
Yeah, in that ready? Jersey. He's ready in 3 weeks.
3 fucking weeks he's going to be skating.
Oh, God.
I'm glad I picked him up on the IR in both my pools at the start of the season. But I don't know where you're at with Vegas currently. We play them Sunday. This is the least terrified I've been in a long time about Vegas. But they're starting to turn their ship around. They just pumped Arizona 7-1
last night, which I don't know if that's a big accomplishment. But, yeah, I don't know. We always seem to have a tough time with Vegas.
It'll be interesting to see a Daryl Sutter team operating at full capacity, how they do in Vegas.
Yeah, it'll be a good litmus.
It'll be a good litmus for sure. I mean, you got to take it with a grain of salt because you've been playing a fuck ton of hockey. You're still on the road. I don't think they're going to be distracted, though. Daryl Sutter probably won't allow that.
Eh? Well, yeah, the next 2 weeks, the first 3 weeks of December are nuts. They're playing like almost every other night.
Daryl Sutter is probably going to make them all sleep in one fucking giant ballroom where he just stays up all night, eh?
They have like their little cots on the floor and shit. But like, seriously, like how good have they been on the road? The best road team in the league. And that's always been a Sutter thing. Like I said, like I remember back in those, it might've been in 2004, but that's what they did at home games. They stayed in hotels.
Right. Like, yeah.
Fucking got these guys dialed in.
Yeah. These, I don't know. This could be the to do two base games of the season coming up here. Vegas Sunday, followed by San Jose on Tuesday before. Then you go home for a 7-game homestand, the last of which is Edmonton. Crazy schedule, but hey, like they've been so good.
Well, don't they play the Blackhawks and Predators in there? It's a weird schedule because you're home for Carolina, Boston.
You're right. Sorry.
And you go out.
You're home for two on the road for two, then 5 at home after that.
Which again, all these teams outside of Chicago are going to be tough. Carolina, Boston, Toronto, Nashville. Oof. Fuck.
Even Anaheim, Seattle. Like you got
Geo's fucking coming up.
Geo.
Yeah, it's great to be back. Fuck. Let's go get Geo. We should trade for him, I think.
All right. Give us the final thought. Take it away.
I don't know. Like, it's just like nice to, we keep saying this. It's just nice to watch good hockey and not to be stressed out of your mind all the time. You know? Don't you agree? It's funny. I was listening to the last one. It's like, this is how good things have been going. We're fucking complaining about the in-game Saddle Dome host. That's our biggest complaint.
Right? I mean, hey, since we started this podcast, this team has been pretty bad. So it's been interesting, right? But now we get to enjoy some of the other side. We get to enjoy some winning together, folks. Fucking A, keep it going. Hey, you made it. It's the end of the podcast. If you liked this episode, please do us a favor. Take a sec and leave a rating and a review on the Apple Podcast app. You can help us grow the audience and introduce some more unfortunate Flames fans to the show. So do it. It's super easy. Just takes a second. Just tap on the show, scroll down, leave a rating. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. We will see you on the next one.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.